Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, yesterday we left Gopakumar in Vaikuntha. He had met Lord Narayan, and first of all, of course, he had traveled there in a very amazing way, and then arrived there, had some very extraordinary experiences waiting out at the front gates, seeing all sorts of devotees and persons, and thinking that they were actually the Supreme Lord. Then he came in one gate after another and finally came to the ultimate palace. And in there he saw Lord Narayan, and he got a very wonderful reception from Lord Narayan. Very compassionate and very benevolent. So then Gopakumar was feeling extremely happy. He'd never experienced anything like this at all. And he thought, maybe this is it. Maybe I've reached the ultimate abode and the ultimate form of the Lord, that form of the Lord I'm looking for. But then he would chant his mantra and see Madan Gopal while in meditation. And Madan Gopal's pastimes and associates and abode. So then he would feel that no, Vaikuntha is not the place. So he was in his sort of customary state of confusion. Am I in the right place or not? When he met Narada Muni. So Narada Muni preaches to Gopakumar, gives him all sorts of interesting information, and we've written the main headings there on the board. So I'll go through step by step as Gopakumar preaches, Nandakumar preaches Narada Muni. Hare Krishna. Narada Muni preaches to Gopakumar. Yes. First of all, he tries the direct approach. Just don't worry about it. Pat him on the back and tell him it's all right. No, there's not really a problem. Just be happy, that's all. Just smile and be happy. And just think that this Lord Narayan and your Lord Madan Gopal are the same. And just tell yourself that, you know, you might as well. And just tell yourself that this Vaikuntha realm and the Vrindavan forest realm of Madan Gopal, that they're the same. Because they are, in a certain sense, they're one. This is the first thing. So Narada Muni, he approached Gopakumar, touched him on his head with his veena, and asked him, and told him actually, that I've been in Vaikuntha a long time, I've never seen anyone like you, meaning depressed, confused, unhappy. I've never seen anyone like you. I've only seen people like you in the material world. So what's wrong? So, as soon as Gopakumar looked at him, he became convinced, I can put my faith in this person as much as in my own guru. So Gopakumar just told everything to Narada Muni. How he was feeling and what he'd experienced previously and how he was meditating, chanting his mantra, seeing Madan Gopal, and having his visions of Vrindavan, but then coming back to consciousness here in Vaikuntha, and it was just not the same, and he was very perplexed. So Narada Muni feels exactly the same way as Gopakumar, actually. But he doesn't want to tell Gopakumar because it may depress Gopakumar more. So, overwhelmed with mercy and compassion, he tries to convince him. Well, actually, the way he tries to convince him is, he says, you know, this form of the Lord that you are seeing, and this abode that you're seeing in your meditation, they are real. They're real. But they're very high. They're much higher than this abode. And that Lord is the highest Lord. And to approach that abode from here and from this platform of devotional service, the Vaikuntha mood, it's very difficult. It's extremely difficult. You have to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And how are you going to do that here in Vaikuntha? So, why don't you just try to be happy here? It's just going to be too complicated and just too much to try to go to that abode. And after all, in one sense, Madan Gopal Narayan, Vrindavan and Vaikuntha, in one sense they're the same. So just try to train your mind to see like that. And then you should be happy. That should be good enough. Narada Muni tries this approach. Actually, the fact is, although it only comes out at the end, that Narada Muni knows that that will not be good enough. Narada Muni already knows all about Gopakumar, actually, because Lord Narayan has told him, and Lord Narayan has sent him. But anyway, he's just beginning here. So then, in order to try to convince Gopakumar that it is all right here, and you don't need to worry about going somewhere else, just try to adjust to it. Make the best use of a bad bargain or something not quite that bad, but just try and see how you can overcome the problems and live with it. So then he explains about the amazing forms of the devotees in Vaikuntha. Yes, he explains that this world and the people and the animals and the trees and everything, they're all Satchitananda. They're not just material entities or material things. They're all eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. And they're all eternal associates of the Lord who have assumed these forms just to please the Lord. Because they want to serve him in that way. So, then he explains some very interesting things about the backgrounds of the devotees of Vaikuntha. He says that when you see, he says that there are two types of devotees in Vaikuntha. One type, you see them in different species in Vaikuntha. The reason is because they worship a particular form of Narayan who is in that form. So if you see them in a form of an animal, that means that their Ishtadeva, their personal deity, that particular form of Narayan that they're attached to is an animal form. Sometimes you'll see them in the form of trees. That means that the particular form of Lord Narayan who they worship is in the form of a tree. So therefore you can understand they all have Sarupya Mukti. But it may not be in the way that you expected. In other words, that they all have four arms. And that human-like form, forearmed form, sort of classic form of Lord Narayan. So, therefore, you see devotees here with all types of forms. Human forms, some have forms like sages. That means they're attached to forms of the Lord like Kapila. Some of them have forms like demigods. Some of them have forms like hogs. So who are they attached to? Varaha. Yes. Some have forms like half man, half lion. Some have forms like dwarves. Some have forms with three eyes, four arms. Some have forms with thousands of arms. So who is their particular deity? The Mahapurusha. And he says an interesting thing, although there's no actual explanation of how it is, but he says that when you see the forms, those devotees who look like the Mahapurusha, then you should understand it is not Sarupya Mukti, it is Sayujya Mukti. Some Vaikuntha version of Sayujya Mukti, of merging with the Mahapurusha. More than that I cannot say, other than that it says it in the book. And some of them who appear as demigods, it means they worshipped some of the, or one of the, certain of the Manvantara avatars, because they are more like demigods. Like Satyasena, Vishvaksena, they're Manvantara avatars. But they are kind of more like demigods, or they look more like, and they tend to act more like demigods. So like this, there are many types of Sarupya Mukti in Vaikuntha. Many, many, many. This is just a little sort of hint, really. Then he says that whatever form of the Lord they worshipped immediately before coming to Vaikuntha, then they're worshipping that form here. Then he says that some of them are different. Some of them have strange forms, and there are no expansions of the Lord with those forms, so that's a second category. Some of them are like monkeys. Some of them are like demons. So what that means, but they're in Vaikuntha, and they're great devotees. They just happen to have these amazing forms. So what does that mean? It means there's a category who, they worship the Lord in their last birth in the material world. They worship some Narayan form or other. And then they become perfect, and then they go to Vaikuntha in the same type, or at least the same looking type of body as what they had in their last life. So therefore, some of them, they were demons, but they became devotees, although they still had their demon bodies. So when they go to Vaikuntha, they have demon bodies, or looking, or monkey bodies, or some strange bodies like that. And therefore, some of them have forms of demigods like Indra and Chandra. Means in their last lives they were Indra or Chandra. And in Vaikuntha they perform similar service, but in Vaikuntha. And it's pure. Similar as demigods, that means. Vaikuntha demigods. And they all see the Lord in forms which are suitable for them. And even though they are all at least those who have returned from material life, there's also those who are permanently there. Those who have returned from material life, they're all worshipping the Lord in the same form that they worshipped Him in. He's in the same form, the form they worshipped Him in their last lives in the material world. But now they're in Vaikuntha. It's just constantly newer and newer, and more wonderful and amazing, even though it's the same form of the Lord. And He says, therefore, there are many areas in Vaikuntha where these particular forms of the Lord have their own little, not little actually, but their own places where they are there with their own group. Many of them, so many. And then there's another category of devotee. We're talking about the amazing devotees and their amazing forms in Vaikuntha. There's another category. They are not attached to any particular form. They love all of the forms. Doesn't make any difference to them. And they may just focus on the, you could say, standard Narayan form. Or they may focus on 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 forms. Or they may even do deity worship. There is deity worship in Vaikuntha. And in fact, as you see here, we've written on the board, Narada Muni is going to talk about deity worship in due course of time. So, this category of devotees who they don't have any particular favorite form, they're very kind of flexible, or they just worship Narayan, that'll be fine for them, or deity form, they're also there. Then he talks about the amazing forms. There are so many amazing devotees with amazing forms and different attitudes. So that must mean there must be some very amazing forms of the Lord. So he says, yes, Narada Muni explains, there are many forms of the Lord. And he mentions like Vamana, Varaha, Kurma, Nrisinga, Matsya, Hansa, and a number of forms he mentions, although there are so many more. And he says, many of these forms have many forms. Yes. He talks of two types or two forms of Matsya. One appeared to save the Vedas at the end of the cycle of the Yugas. And the other came to give his mercy to Satyavrata. Satyavrata is there in the Bhagavatam. Huh? He came to save the Vedas at the end of the cycle of the four Yugas. There are at least two Kurmas. One who held up Mandara Mountain in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the other, second one is always holding up the earth planet. And there may well be others, but these at least are well known. Then, there are at least 5 forms of Varaha. One appeared from Brahma's nostril at the beginning of creation and saved the earth and disappeared. Another saved the earth from a flood during a partial devastation, killed Hiranyaksha, and went to Swargaloka. Another is the predominating deity of sacrifice in Treta Yuga. And he teaches that process. A fourth one took the earth planet at a time when the hills and mountains, or some hills and mountains, were too high, and ground those mountains and hills to dust until they were the right size. And then the Mother Earth assumed the form of Varahi, and as a result of their combination, two children were born. That form of Varaha disappeared, concluded his pastimes by merging into Lord Nrisingadev. Then there's a fifth Varaha, and there may well be others. There's a fifth one who is down there under the earth with Kurama, also holding up the earth. So this is just a little sampling. Then there are numerous Nrisingadevs. One tore apart Hiranyakashipu. Another, now this is what the book says, so, you know, take it as it is, I guess. Another one defeated all the celestial mothers. That's what it says. Then this is just about the most interesting one. A third one assumed the form of an ordinary household cat. Then there are at least two Vamanas. One tricked Bali. The other tricked a demon named Dundu. Dundu. Who, anyway, there is a Dundu in Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was a demon. But he was killed by somebody. Anyway, maybe that's another Dundu, but this Dundu was tricked also by Lord Vamana, and he was a demon. So they're all transcendental. And they're all the Lord. He says that you shouldn't understand them as being like reflections of the sun in different bodies of water. If you've got a number of pots full of water and the sun is reflected in each, it's not like that. Why? Because that would mean there's only one Lord and there are many reflections, but they're not really the Lord. They just appear to be. So they're insubstantial. So the example, the way we should understand them is that they are like the sun who is seen differently by different people who are standing in different settings on the earth in different places. In other words, one is seeing the sun over the mountains. Another is seeing the sun through the trees. Another is seeing the sun over the ocean. You get the idea? They're seeing the same sun, but they're different settings. So therefore their experience of the sun is somewhat different. And if you satisfy one form, all the other forms are satisfied. So, why does he manifest all these forms? To satisfy all the devotees. So what comes first, the form or the desire of the devotee for the form, for a form? According to this, it's the desire of the devotee. So they're all the same person. It is not that there's only one form and the other forms are illusory. It is not that there are many lords, independent individuals, But there is one Lord appearing in many forms, and he gives the example of Lord Brahma. As he gives his own example, Narada Muni, that he went to Dwarka and he saw the Lord in so many different situations. He went to one palace, the Lord was joking with Rukmini. He went to another palace and the Lord was meditating on himself. He went to another palace, the Lord was practicing fighting. He went to another palace, it was the afternoon. He went to the next palace, it was the morning. And each time when the Lord saw him, the Lord said, "Oh, Narada, you've come. How wonderful." It wasn't that, "Oh, it's you again. I just saw you next door. You're very persistent." Not like that. Each time it was, "Oh, how amazing. What good fortune. You have come, Narada." And similarly with Lord Brahma. Well, his experience was different, but same principle is illustrated. First of all, there was Krishna. Then Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves. Then there was Krishna as the cowherd boys and calves. Then, very shortly afterwards, Krishna manifested the Vishnu forms. And then he showed himself as like the Param Brahma, the Supreme Absolute. And then he's again Krishna. So Lord Brahma had experience like that. These are authorized experiences of how the one Lord is manifesting in different forms. Yes. So he does this for the sake of his pastimes, and Narada gives the example of the gopis and the queens. This indicates, of course, that Narada knows more about things than he is maybe letting on, or more about things than there is just in Vaikuntha at least. He says the gopis and queens, they love Krishna so much. They want to serve him. They want to offer him something. So all the gopis or all the queens, they offer him something to eat at the same time. He appears in an individual form with each one and accepts their offering. And each one thinks, "He is accepting my offering only." Or as in the rasa dance, "He is only dancing with me. Just see." So for the sake of the pastimes, all these forms are there in different ways under different circumstances. Then the next thing, he talks about how the goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi, the same principles apply with her. She is the counterpart of the Lord, so she does the same things. When he manifests a certain form, she assumes a suitable form to be the associate, to be the consort. So she is also, it's exactly the same really. So many forms of Mahalakshmi. However, Narada Muni says, however, people are generally familiar with Lakshmi, who is the bestower of opulence within the material world. But he says that that form of Lakshmi is not taken very seriously. The Lord prefers even the neophyte devotees to her because she's very unsteady. Sometimes she's with him, then she ducks away to give someone some fortune, and then she's back. So he doesn't take her so seriously. And not only does he not take her so seriously, but the devotees, the liberated souls, the candidates for liberation, they also don't really care for that form of Mahalakshmi. And she has so many expansions, like all the wives of Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Then all the Durga forms, they're also expansions, sort of separated or reflected expansions. She has so many forms. Then she has Swarup Lakshana and Tatastha Lakshana. She has her essential qualities or characteristics and her secondary or marginal characteristics, qualities. Her Swarup Lakshana, her essential qualities are that she is the totality of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. She is eternal, absolutely real, and without beginning and end, and therefore there is no way to describe her fully. And in that feature or that sort of aspect of her is called Mahavibhuti or Yoga Maya. That's her Swarup Lakshana. Then her Tatastha Lakshana, her secondary nature or secondary qualities, secondary features are that she is the agent through who the different types of sweetness and wonder in devotional service and even in the forms of the Lord are manifest. Yeah. In other words, she is a special ingredient. She adds the sweetness and wonder in the different types of devotional service and the different forms of the Lord and the different pastimes that the Lord has in his different forms, the special qualities that are displayed there of sweetness, beauty, and wonder, they are manifested through her. As a result, or on this basis, she empowers the Lord's abodes with their special qualities. She empowers the devotees with their special qualities. And she enhances devotional service with its special qualities of sweetness and wonder and beauty. She, in other words, she is like the active agent or active ingredient which gives special charm to all these things. How does that sound? Sort of handle that? Kind of? Of course, he says next that it's very difficult to understand. Actually, he says the devotees can understand this, but the dry logicians cannot understand it. Then he says that when we consider the Lord's energy as two, inferior and superior, then we consider her as the superior, and the inferior is her reflection or her shadow. And that inferior energy, Maya, generates the illusory conditions of this material world, embodies falseness and illusion, is not, well, this is interesting, is both non-eternal and primeval, and therefore cannot be described. Primeval means eternal, basically. She is both non-eternal and eternal, and therefore cannot be described. And she lives in the eighth covering. That was her. The last covering of the universe. And if you transcend her, you come to the point of liberation or devotional service. So, the goddess of fortune, wow, she's amazing. Then, let's see. Then, he talks about some of the interactions between the different forms of the Lord and the different types of devotees. So, first of all, actually, he mentions Krishna is the source of all the incarnations, even of Narayan. Yes, because he is about, just shortly, he's going to take Gopakumar, kind of reveal, point him in a higher direction, send him to Ayodhya, actually, and Dwaraka. So he's about to reveal some of these higher things. So Krishna is superior to Narayan, and but some of his most supreme features are displayed when he enters this world. That'll be explained after a little while, or in a couple of chapters, how the Lord displays his most amazing qualities when he appears on earth or within this material world. So then, analyzing the situations of the devotees in Vaikuntha, remember, it's already been said that they're more or less equal and they're not great differences. You know, it's not really very great differences. There tends to be a sense of equality between the devotees. So, Narada Muni says that in Vaikuntha, all the devotees experience the topmost pleasure in terms of their particular moods. In other words, if you ask any of them, they'll say, yes, I experience the topmost pleasure. Even though they may experience quite different pleasures or different types of pleasures because they're serving differently. So therefore they're having different experiences in their services. So there are different results for the different services, but all of them feel as satisfied. So therefore we don't really make distinctions so much. He says the Lord's pastimes expand into unlimited varieties. Why? Because the Lord's mind is fathomless. Therefore, he has unlimited capacity for pastimes. And in them, he does many things, but particularly, he displays his mercy to the highest degree possible, as can be experienced by the particular devotee who he is relating to. I thought that was a very nice point. Did you catch that point? No? His pastimes are unlimited because his mind is unlimited. In his pastimes, he displays many wonderful things. But the most wonderful thing is his mercy, which he gives to the devotees to the highest degree that they are capable of accepting in terms of who they are and what you know, their natures are, and like that. He'll give them all the mercy they can take. And that is the most wonderful part of his pastimes. These devotees, they're all on the platform of ultimate reality. So there's no question of being interested in material happiness. If there appears to be any hierarchy, it is just because there are different types of services. That's all. Then he says, actually, there are two levels of devotees. There are the eternal associates, like Anantashesh and Garuda. Then there are those who came recently, like Bharat Maharaj, Priyavrata, and Jayan Vijay. So there are slight differences in the way these two groups relate with the Lord. The eternal associates are closer, and the more recent associates are at a little more of a distance. And when the Lord appears in the material world, only eternal associates go with him. In fact, those eternal associates are so amazing, you can hardly tell the difference between them and the Lord. In fact, in some respects, they're equal. What are the respects they're equal in? They are equally eternal, Satchit Ananda. They're equal in terms of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So what is the difference? The difference is that the devotees are helplessly attracted to serving the Lord. Like iron filings are helplessly attracted to a magnet. And the Lord accepts the service. Devotional service has such an amazing potency. I mean, I hope there's not too many points for the mind, but as Krishna is absolute, so in Vaikuntha, his devotees are absolute also. By dint of being his energies, by dint of being one with him in that sense, how do they display their oneness? Through, Narada Muni says, the playful expansion of his pure spiritual energy, which is bhakti. Through the bhakti shakti, the Lord, because of the bhakti shakti which the devotees have, the Lord is transforming and performing pastimes in response to the devotees and their bhakti shakti. So therefore there's a oneness and extraordinary type of oneness between the Lord and his devotees. Hare Krishna. So how are we doing, devotees? Are we still in Vaikuntha? No anxiety? How about a little deity worship? That's the next subject. Gopakumar is quite fond of deity worship. After all, he was the king. And He turned the whole kingdom into a festival for the deity. And then he was in Jagannath Puri. And he just loved the deity of Jagannath. Oh, so Gopakumar, he is very fond of deity worship. However, he has a doubt. Now, as we mentioned a little earlier, there was some reference to deity worship. How certain devotees are worshipping the Lord in Vaikuntha in different forms, and some of them in the deity form. They're worshipping the deity. So, Gopakumar has heard that, but he has a doubt. He says, you know, you have mentioned deity worship as if the form of the deity is no less than any of these other forms that you've been talking about. However, in certain of the Puranas, there are some statements which appear to minimize deity worship. Like, as he gives a number of quotes, but one of them is famous verse 11:2:47 from Srimad Bhagavatam. Archayam eva haraye pujam ya shradaye hate. Na tad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smrita. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general, is called a prakrita bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. And there are numerous other statements saying somewhat similar things, which appear to reflect negatively on deity worship. So Gopakumar, he's fond of deity worship, but he's not happy about this. So he asks, why? Why are these statements there in these Puranas? And what do they really mean? Are they true, or is there some mistake? Now, Narada Muni, of course, he's a big expert in deity worship. So he says, no, they're all correct. Those statements are all correct. But you have to understand what they're talking about. He says there are two main types of deity worship. In one type, the devotee is convinced that the form I am worshipping is the Lord directly. Then, Narada says, whatever form the person worships, form of the Lord, as long as they are convinced that this is directly the Lord, he is standing there in person in the deity form. Even if the form is a concoction, even if he worships, Narada Muni says, even if he worships a blade of grass as the Lord, recognizing the Lord within, he says, this is first class devotional service, and even if they offend other devotees, those offenses should not be taken seriously, and yes, they'll never fall down. But some people, they are worshipping some form. Again, it could be any form, including a concocted form. But they think that it just sort of represents the Lord. It's just an image. It is not actually the Lord. It's just some representational type of thing. So, they do not receive the fruits of deity worship. And he says, these verses that you have referred to, they are talking about that type of person. That type of person who does not recognize that the deity is directly the Lord, commits offenses, becomes proud and does not receive the results of deity worship. So they are considered materialistic devotees. However, an interesting little last point. Even if these worshippers are fully dedicated to their worship, their hearts will become purified. And if they get the association of good devotees, they can also become first-class devotees in due course of time. Ah, well, we're almost there. The glories of pure devotional service on the level of prema. So Narada Muni says there are two types of devotees, pure and impure. The impure devotees who have material desires, their material desires are fulfilled before they receive the results of their devotional service. Therefore, the pure devotees criticize them. That's an interesting way of putting it. Their material desires are fulfilled before they receive the results of their devotional service. Therefore, pure devotees say they are faulty. The pure devotees on the level of prema, this is mainly what we're talking about here, devotional service on the level of prema. They cannot tolerate anything other than devotional service and the ecstasy of devotional service, and therefore they're dear to the Lord. So therefore we can understand. Sort of, we can understand. Therefore anything is easy to get from the Lord except pure devotional service on the level of prema. Why? Because the materialistic, the devotees who are desiring something other than prema, they get whatever they desire quickly. And seeing that by pure devotional service on the level of prema, the Lord becomes subservient to his devotees and loses his independence, therefore he doesn't give it very often. However, Narada Muni says, this is the most glorious quality of the Lord, that he gives himself to his devotees on the level of prema. This is the most glorious quality of the Lord because it contradicts his natural qualities, like being self-satisfied or being the supreme controller. That's a nice point. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is he? He is Swarat. He is the Parameshwara. That's why he is what he is. But when the devotees are on the level of prema, the Lord becomes subservient to them. So he gives up these qualities of being self-satisfied and being the supreme controller. And he becomes subservient to them. He does whatever they want. Then the highest aspect of prema is Mahabhava. In Mahabhava, Narada Muni says, the devotee becomes overwhelmed with distress, pain and sorrow. As a result, the Lord becomes totally bound to the devotee. Compared to devotional service on the level of prema, heavenly pleasure and liberation are easy to get, just as compared to getting a Chintamani stone, glass, and sometimes even gold, are not so hard to get. Once in a while, the Lord gives it to someone who wants nothing else. He says, even the best of scriptures do not like describing it, particularly Mahabhava, because when ordinary people hear about it, they'll be put off hearing about the suffering and the distress of separation. But Gopakumar is a candidate for it. And he belongs in that place where that Mahabhava resides. And soon he will get it by the mercy of the Lord, Narada Muni says. So I know that's rather a lot of information to digest. But now there's a little change of scene. Gopakumar, having heard this, becomes overwhelmed with a storm-like urge, powerful storm-like urge, to achieve the lotus feet of Madan Gopal and experience that ecstasy. He wants it. He's attracted to it. Well, it's naturally his right, actually. But then he's thinking, oh, but I'm here in Vaikuntha. What to do? So Narada, noting that these things are not normally discussed in Vaikuntha, says, so I will now tell you about some other things beyond Vaikuntha. Most of what we have been discussing, except the last little bit about Mahabhava, most of it is all part and parcel of life in Vaikuntha. Life and love in Vaikuntha. It's quite a colorful place. So Narada tells Gopakumar that not far away is Ayodhya, and your Lord is present there as Ram, and some distance from there is Dwaraka, and your Lord is present there as Yadunandan, Yadunath, the Lord of the Yadu dynasty. You should, he tells Gopakumar, you should go to Dwaraka. You'll probably fit in there. But on the way, stop in Ayodhya and just see. Just see what it's like. Maybe you'll fit in there. If not, Lord Ram will send you on to Dwaraka. And he taught Gopakumar how to worship Lord Ram. Jai Shri Ram, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, and things like this. Yes, these various glorifications. He teaches him some. How to glorify Lord Ram when you see him. He says, even though Lord Ram is not really the same, not exactly the same as your Madan Gopal, but still, a person who is totally committed to achieving a certain goal at all costs, at any cost, you know, he's just into it, will also be happy to find something which has a faint scent of it. Yes, that's true. Someone who is completely into getting something. He'll do anything. Nothing will stop him. No price is too high. No difficulty is too hard. If he finds something which has a little bit of what is there in the thing he's looking for, that's good. It's not bad. It's not the same as getting the actual thing you're looking for, but it's good. So, if you're not happy in Ayodhya, Lord Ram will send you to Dwaraka. So you should go there. And then Narada explains. He says, don't worry that Lord Narayan will feel offended. He has told me to instruct you like this. He asked me to come and speak to you. And he told me what to say to you. So all these things that we've just been discussing today, that all came from Lord Narayan, because he wants to help Gopakumar. And he said, don't worry, Lord Narayan, he already approves, so you can just go. So Gopakumar goes to Ayodhya, chanting Jai Shri Ram, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, and different other, you know, nice mantras glorifying Lord Ram. In the distance, he sees some monkeys, restless monkeys, jumping, chanting, Ram, Ram. So they greeted Gopakumar, took him by the hand, and promptly stole his flute. They didn't like it because it reminded them of another form of the Lord, not their Lord, Ram. I think he gets it back after a while, but anyway. Then he saw some humans. This is outside Ayodhya. They haven't entered the city yet. He saw some humans. They were even more beautiful than the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. So why were they there? Why? How could they tolerate being away from Lord Ram? It was because he had told them to go out there and meet this Gopakumar when he comes and bring him in. Otherwise, if they had not had that special mission, they would not have been able to tolerate being apart from him. So Gopakumar, overcome with ecstasy, collapsed and had to be carried into Ayodhya. So he was carried into the palace and he started coming to consciousness. He saw Bharat and Shatrughna. And he thought that Bharat was Ram. So he hurled himself at the lotus feet of Bharat, saying, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Raghunandan, and so on. And Bharat covered his ears, forbade him to speak like that, and said, I am simply his servant. Then Gopakumar fell unconscious again, so Hanuman dragged him in to the presence of Lord Ram. So when Gopakumar saw Lord Ram, he was reminded of Lord Narayan, except he had a bow, and he looked somewhat more modest. Yes. Gopakumar collapsed again. The Lord picked him up, and then Gopakumar saw Hanuman doing many services at the same time, fanning, holding an umbrella, glorifying, doing all these things apparently at the same time. He was so dedicated to serving the Lord. Gopakumar bowed repeatedly up and down. The Lord told him, please, don't be so reverential. Just come here. I am conquered by your love. Gopakumar again began offering obeisances. So Hanuman picked him up and forcibly put him at the lotus feet of the Lord. Gopakumar felt, I have finally found my place. Finally. Where there's more happiness than I even hoped there would be. So he thought he had reached the ultimate. So he remained there for some time, dressed as a cowherd boy, chanting his mantra, but then gradually felt that Ram, he is very nice, but not as nice as Madan Gopal. He would become depressed. Hanuman would notice this and try to console him and convince him that there's no real difference, and that helped. But finally, Lord Ram called Gopakumar and told him, you should go to Dwaraka. And sent him there under the care of Jambavan. So that is the end of the fourth chapter. Gopakumar is on his way to Dwaraka. Any comments or questions? There are two types of deity worship, Narada Muni says. One is a form which the worshipper is completely convinced that this is the Lord directly. The other is a form which the worshipper is not convinced. The worshipper thinks it's like an idol, in other words. It just represents the Lord. And he says, even, you know, it means even in an extreme case, even if it's a concocted form, but if the person has complete faith in it, then that is also considered acceptable. It doesn't mean it's just fine and so we don't need to worry about it. It means even in that case. Normally, they're regular deities, proper deities, and the devotees will be seeing them and accepting them as being directly the Lord. But even if the form is just a concocted form, and he says, even if a person worships a blade of grass, convinced that the Lord is within it, then this is acceptable. But when the person is worshiping a form, but does not have that faith, thinks it's just an idol, it just represents the Lord, some symbolic type of thing, then this is not acceptable. Here, he's talking about the worshipper and the state of mind of the worshipper. If the worshipper is fixed in that faith, you know, in the vast majority of cases, he'll be worshipping a bona fide deity, so everything will be all right. But even if the deity is not really bona fide, but if his faith is completely absorbed and given that this is the Lord, on the basis of that conviction, on the basis of worshipping in that mood, then it's considered acceptable. That devotee's on high level is sort of a bit of an assumption, really. It's just meaning that they're fixed in that consciousness, irrevocably committed, convinced that this is the Lord. As could we apply the idea we mentioned earlier that first comes the desire of the devotee and then the form of the Lord manifests, you know, as a gift to the devotee, as a reciprocation. It's possible it can be seen like that, yeah. Because, you know, initially the whole subject was mentioned in the context of so many forms of the Lord manifesting because there's so many types of devotees from so many different backgrounds and with so many different interests, or, you know, interests in him in so many ways. The idea that we have heard of some people going to the spiritual world and having a form there like what they had in their last life in the material world, how does that tie in with the idea of having a swaroop, an eternal form and personality? Well, this is what happened to Gopa Kumar. He is Gopa Kumar. He was Gopa Kumar. He is Gopa Kumar. He's a cowherd boy. And he remains a cowherd boy. So, some people, it appears, in their last life, they are in a form which is like what they're going to be like in the spiritual world. Happens with Gopa Kumar. Mother Vishakha. Question is that it's been described here how all the different forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha are not like reflections in pots of water, but they are like the examples given of the sun seen in different contexts in terms of the observer. But then we're told that the Paramatma, Supersoul in the material world, can be understood sometimes in that reflected sense, that there's one Paramatma. There are not many Paramatmas, but there's one Paramatma who is in many persons' hearts. This is talking about the forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha, the pastime forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha. The Supersoul is, you know, a functional form of the Lord within the material world. So it's a different type of form of the Lord. Yeah. People don't really have eternal relationships with the Paramatma as such. He's just there to guide the living entities within the material world. Prabhupada gave the example of a city official being put in charge of some sort of special festival. While the festival is on in the city, he is the manager. But as soon as the festival's over, he's not the manager. So while we're in the material world, the Supersoul is with us. But once we're not in the material world, the Supersoul is no longer with us. So it's a different category of form of the Lord. But the forms in Vaikuntha, the forms in Vaikuntha should not be seen like that. They're all specific individuals, and they're all, you know, kind of very specifically tailored to the devotees, the desires of the devotees in their eternal relationships. So that example is given of them being reflected. Yes, and the reflection or the medium of reflection is the body, just like the mirror. So when the mirror is gone, there are many mirrors, when the mirror is gone, the reflection in it is gone also. But it actually doesn't affect the reflected object, it remains as it is. So similarly, there's one Supersoul. But when, you know, one of his expanded forms is withdrawn back into himself because the living entity he was with has gone back to Godhead, it doesn't affect him in the slightest. But these forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha, they're different. Yes, they're specifically connected and eternally connected to the individual devotees. Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Kijaya.